Mornix Night Tech Show is on.
Is on.
Your link to GNU Linux and the latest technology. 2 hours of insightful guests, tech info, and playful banter.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Free software, free speech, open technology,
and open mics.
I love it.
Now, live from the Linux Link Tech Show studios, here are your hosts, Dan, Alan, Pat, and Link. Link it up and take it away.
I think you guys need to come to my house to do a show. Because, you know, I need someone to hang out and smoke a cigar with, you know?
You can fly me out there, I'll do
that
it.
That works for me.
Bring it on, man.
Tonight, we have two wonderful guests. Starting off the hour is Ken, also known, better known as Helios, from Lobby for Windows, right?
Yeah, you got that right. Good way to start the show.
Lobby for Linux, and it's great to have you on, Ken.
Well, it's good to be here, fellas. Thanks for having me on.
Welcome.
And awesome. I read your blog all the time, and it's some really good stuff.
How much I owe you for that?
Don't worry, I'll send you the bill. You just PayPal me.
That's done deal, man.
So, you know, tell us a little about yourself, Ken, and exactly, you know, what is Lobby for Linux, who is Lobby for Linux, and what is your a goal slash agenda? And how did it get started?
Lobby for Linux started when Windows pissed me off. I owned a business. In fact, we were about the third largest power washing company in Central Texas. Offices in San Antonio, Houston, and here in Austin. And came into work one day, and BSODs all the way across my screens. Same with the other two cities. Long story short, the variation of the Sasser worm. So that was on a Friday morning. By the time my people came into work the next Monday, Linux was on all the machines. I knew nothing about it. I just knew that I was sick and tired of, you know, messing with the garbage. So I got into Linux, and I never knew what Linux was. I didn't have any idea. I just knew it was an alternative, and any alternative was better than what I was dealing with.
Yeah.
So it kind of grew from there. And
hold on a second.
How
did you go from the blue screen of death to Linux being on your machines? Did you do that?
Well, you know, largely yes. Websites and a good friend of mine that happened to know a little bit about networking. No, actually, that's not true. A little bit of a website and a good friend that knew a lot about networking. So he put it together for me and pretty much made it train monkey work. And after that, it was simple enough. Everything was dummy terminals. In fact, the business I set up not too long ago was almost a clone of my own. But at any rate, I got the religion, so to speak. I got into the whole open source mantra and the philosophy and the understanding of what it was, and I caught the fever. And I began to wonder why everybody else didn't see what I was seeing, and it was because they didn't know about it. So I made it my life's work to make sure that they do know about it. And I liked it, and then the rest is hysterical, really. And that's where we ended up today. That's how Lobby for Linux started. It started out as a advocacy site, trying to put developers together with users so we could get together on it. That worked out real well, as you can see. So basically, it just it went from that to a this is Linux. This is what we can do for you. Let's see if we can't get together and put the users together with the non-users and make us all users.
Now, Ken, I noticed on your website you have computers for kids. What exactly is that?
Everybody's cute. That's my passion. Computers for kids is my passion. I was in getting a flu shot, and I ran into started a conversation with a lady in there that was seeing a doctor, and she turned out to be a school teacher, and we were talking about kids not having computers, and she was pretty much railing on it. I mean, she was saying that she had to give alternative assignments to, you know, the first thing they had to do was find out who had computers at home and who didn't, because politically correct to identify a child as poor in a classroom. So that way they had to have a list, and I thought, well, you know, why don't they have computers? You know, I mean, it's because they don't have the money for them, and internet connection isn't cheap. So we got to talking, and it was kind of, it actually was a clandestine operation, because the Austin Independent School District frowns upon, well, you might call it their own prime directive. They just don't, they can't get involved in students' lives to that extent, you know. So I was being slipped names and numbers as in numbers of people that needed computers, and I was scrounging the parts and building them and meeting somebody in a Dollar General parking lot and putting them out of my car into theirs, and some kid would get a computer. Well, it started getting phone calls and emails, and it just kind of got out of hand, and, you know, pretty soon I had more requests than I had time. So I've got, there's a few guys that really, they are computers for kids. I'm not. I'm just the guy that has the website and tells people about it. They're the guys that come over two or three nights a week, and we sit around my dining room table and we build computers. I mean, it's not like some corner office with glass and chrome and a, you know, a view of the city. I mean, this happens out of my home. It's very low scale, low tech.
And
well, the guys over here were involved in something like that, but it didn't turn out so well.
It was evil.
Well, I mean,
that was the mild way of putting it.
Well, I mean, it can. Nobody knows who anybody is on the internet, and everybody's got a scheme and everybody's got a scam. So it's hard to separate yourself, you know, from the bad when there's so much bad going on. You know, so and you know, people say, well, I'm raising money to build computers. Well, who knows? You know, so, and that's one of the things that we kind of fought against, and I just got sick and tired of it. So instead of asking people for donations to do it, I started an enterprise, and actually, that's Lobby for Linux has kind of evolved into that enterprise. It's called Helios Solutions, and we bring Linux to people that normally wouldn't know even how to put it on their computers, and we do it for a real cheap price. Now we just started it. It's less than a week old as we speak, and we've had surprising results with it. So it's from those efforts that we are now able to build the computers. And I really do have to give a plug to Kathy and the folks at ZA Reason, ZAReason.com. They build computers with pre-installed Ubuntu, and they've been more than supportive. So those guys deserve a tip of the fedora. No pun intended.
Ah, now, I assume that you guys are installing Ubuntu, right?
No, we're not installing Ubuntu. And boy, I sure don't want to start any wars. So I'm not going to tell you what I put on these computers. There's four different distributions we put on them, mm-hmm. depending on the person that's getting the computer. If they're a complete novice, we put one distribution on it. I will put Ubuntu on it eventually, but let me tell you what we ran into. In fact, I blogged on it not too long ago. The fact of the matter is when you first put Ubuntu on your computer, if you've got a Windows partition, or if you've got other Linux partitions, it takes three men and a boy to pull it up. You have to actually hand code the darn. And some people say that that's ridiculous. You don't have to, but you do. You have to actually drop to the command line and mount the darn thing yourself. And that's silly, because there's distributions that when you install it, everything's right there. All you have to do is click it, and it comes up. With Ubuntu, that's not the case right now. So it's for that reason and that reason only that we're not using it.
So now go ahead, and you got me curious now. Go ahead and name names. What do you put on there? I'll tell you what we put on ours. When we did Computers for Kids, Dan and I sat down and made a hacked-out version of Vector Linux at the time. Isn't that right, Dan?
Yep.
Vector that we hacked
up. We call the Vector for Kids.
Yeah, Vector for Kids. Which is pretty cool, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, somewhere I still have a CD of that.
In fact, I'd like to see what you did. We put on Vector. We put on Mepis. We put on Granular Linux. and there are times that we will put on FreeSpire.
Cool.
So,
and now are you getting any support from any of those larger Linux distributions?
And no, because this is the first time they've ever been mentioned. Nobody knew what we were putting on there. So,
oh well, you can hand them right up now.
There's people that love him and people that hate him, and I've never met the man personally, but I think Warren's done some wonderful work with Memphis, and at the risk of just completely frosting the ass of everybody else that listens to you, I think he hit it out of the park going back to the Debian repositories, and I don't know if you've kept up with that, but
yes.
I think he did. I think Warren needs to touch them all, man, because he hit a home run.
Yeah, Warren is a friend of ours too, so we really like Warren, and we respect a lot of it. He does a lot of really hard work, and he does it himself, you know. So.
Well, and you know what?
A good deal of it, anyway.
Somebody mentioned the other day in a personal email, without quite saying so, they resented the fact that he was going to make some money off of Memphis. And, you know, and then that seems to be a prevailing attitude with the sector of the community, you know. And, man, I hope he makes a million. I hope Warren makes a million, because he's not only turned out a good product, he's sacrificed a lot for the community, and a lot of people don't realize it. But then again, you know, so have a lot of the distro developers. So, you know, I mean, credit goes around, but I am real fond of Warren's work, and the Vector guys, I can't say enough good about them, because they've taken a difficult distribution and they've turned it into gold. Now, have you guys looked at the granular? Have you looked at granular yet?
No.
In fact, I've never even heard of it.
Not too many people have. It's a fork's not the right word, and I'm not going to use it. It's a spinoff, and what I believe so far to be an improvement on PC Linux OS.
Really?
And of course that's going to cause some political problems too. But you know, if Techstar can take Mandrake and turn it into PC Linux, why can't somebody take PC Linux and turn it into granular? See my point? I mean, what's the argument? This is all about making a better product. It's not about, you know, political infighting within the distribution. Of course, there's none of that anyway, right?
No, I was just going to comment. You seem to be very sensitive to political infighting.
Who, me?
Yes. You seem to be a little sensitive to that.
No, not a bit. No. I mean, not that I start any or anything. Yes, I am political. I am sensitive to political infighting, because it's doing us more damage than it is good. And you know, we've got a tough road to hoe, and we've got our own turning against us, and I don't care what anybody says. My personal thought is that there's been treason in the higher companies, such as Malvell treason. And when we have a fight against that, you know, it just makes our job harder. So I don't know. I know you've dealt with this in the past. Are you still getting a lot of flack over your position on it?
We get no flack.
Depends on whose position you're talking about.
Yeah.
Well, I was talking about Pat's, but I mean, you know.
But
eating Apple?
No. I'm talking about the larger companies like Novell and Zandros making the backdoor deals with Microsoft.
Prefer if they didn't, you know, but.
What are you going to do?
Companies do what the hell they please.
Yep, right. I understand.
What are you going to do? You're not going to support them. You're not going to, use their product.
Don't give them your money.
Precisely. Yep. And that's my point as well. But it still caused us problems. And again, the political crap is just stuff we don't need.
Yeah. Well, I know you see.
Like I said, that's what Lobby for Linux came up for.
Yeah, you seem to catch some flack on occasion. That comments go flying across Alexa, and sometimes a big stink comes up, and it's pointing to your blog and saying, "Oh my God, Helios did X, Y, and Z, or said X, Y, and Z," and a big fever starts. And how does it, I mean, does that discourage you when stuff like that happens?
No. It never has. And I've been accused of actually doing that on purpose, and that's I'm somewhat flattered that somebody would think that what I had to say had that much impact. And I'll take that as the league that we play in, you know. But no, it doesn't discourage me at all. And in fact, I'm encouraged by it, and not by the fact that my name was mentioned, but by the fact that a dialogue has been started, you know. Because you know, after the gunfire ceases, you know, people start putting things back together, and I think that's what we need to do.
So, what's your opinion on how all this is going down with the backdoor deals, and do you think there's a larger insidious plot in effect here, or is it just business as usual with these companies?
Well, it depends on whose perspective. From Novell and Zandros and the other people that have been involved in it, they saw a chance to make some money, and I'm not going to begrudge them that, because that's what they do. However, I don't trust Microsoft any farther than I can throw, you know, the campus itself. And I've made it no secret that I am a 20-year friend of somebody that just retired from there, and this person has fed me information over the past 3 years that has been validated throughout the time, you know, and as things have been said and predicted, big back quotes around predicted. And then, of course, they come true, and I was hailed as a psychic. No, I had a guy feed me information, and then he retires and moves to Buenos Aires for reasons that he thinks are important. But I don't fault the companies for making the money. What I do fault them for is not realizing what they were going to do to the community by doing it. Basically, it was just pretty much, you know, screw you, you know, we're going to do this. And I think finally we can come to the realization that those people really don't care about the open source community as an open source community.
So what you're saying is that you're trying to find a company that you can get behind that isn't a bunch of lying scumbags and has some integrity, right?
That's what I'm looking for. You've seen one around.
No. In fact, you know, I have not. Yeah,
you know, and I've been looking, and you know, I'm not gonna Novell. That wasn't a surprise. Kevin surprised me. Of course, you know, Kevin walked, right?
Yes.
Right.
Wonder why?
Well, I mean, do you really think that there's something deeper in that, or you know, he just felt, you know, hey, it's time to move on.
No. The crap's going to hit the fan here pretty quick, fellas, and the fan's spinning at turbo speed right now. So, that's all I can say. 2 to 3 months, it'll all be clear why he left, and the timing of his leaving. It'll be clear then. Now he's getting out. Well, the getting out's good. You know, when you got time to separate yourself from the blast, you do it. And that's exactly what's happened. So, it'll all come out in a couple months. But the fact is that Microsoft knows, and this is the bottom line, Microsoft knows they see open source and Linux as being their demise. And doesn't it strike you as, I mean, I think I need to go take a shower every time I think about this. Microsoft is making millions from these damn SUSE certificates. And we got guys like Than over in East Europe putting out distros like eLive, which I don't know if you guys ever looked at it.
Uh-huh.
eLive is amazing. What this guy's done with the evolution, what this guy's done with E17 is stunning. You know, but here this guy's struggling just to buy video adapter cards, you know what I mean? I mean, just so he can test his stuff. And you got Microsoft making millions of dollars off of Linux. You know, there's something wrong with that guy.
And you think it's all going to come to a head in a couple months?
No, it's going to take longer than a couple months. I think that once the community can get there, and I don't want to say get their act together. I think once the community realizes, you know, that they've got Microsoft on the run, and fellas, we do. Honest to goodness, we do. They don't know what to do because they can't fight it, and the GPL3 has pretty much sealed their doom. That's why they made these mad dashes to sign the deal with Linspire when they did. because once GPL-3 came into being, they don't have a shot. So no, it's going to take more than a couple months. But I think once the community realizes that they got Redmond on the ropes, remember that phrase, by the way, you'll see it again. Once they know they got Redmond on the ropes, I think they're going to have a little more confidence and move forward as far as being advocates.
Yeah, you know, speaking of those deals, those backdoor deals that were made, you know, after the flack that Novell got, I'll admit I wasn't that surprised that a company like Zandros would make a deal like that, but I was kind of surprised that Linspire went down that route.
Right.
Seriously, considering the history they had.
Yeah, I mean, it almost seems like, you know, here they are starting out of the gate with a negative attitude from the community, trying to, you know, build up some positive, some you know, build up a bank, a trust bank here, and all of a sudden, and then they turn around and do the one thing that just would get the community in an uproar about them and put them back on the crap list. It almost doesn't make sense.
I don't think that was their choice. I think something happened and they were forced into that decision. In fact, I would bet money on it.
I think you're a pretty smart fella. You've just hit it on the nose. And if you follow the thought process down, there's, and you know what? It's just, you know what? I'm going to have to get a Kevin Sue Me shirt now instead of a Steve Sue Me shirt because he may well. But there's very few people that made money out of this Linspire deal.
Mm-hmm.
Very few money that actually made any money out of the deal. We're going to know who made the money shortly. Enough said. You know.
Yeah.
Like I said, you leave as soon as the fuse is lit, right? So you can get away from the blast?
Right.
Okay, well, there it is right there. But as soon as the community comes together and realizes that, you got to understand, too, I mean, we need to understand it's not everybody that really has it in their blood to advocate and to spread the word and the religion. You know, but we've been doing it all wrong. And I wrote an article about this just a couple weeks ago. We've been selling Linux wrong. We've been trying to make people understand that, you know, it's all about freedom 0 through 3, and it's all about, you know, the philosophy and the open source. You know what? My mom doesn't care about that. She cares that her system doesn't work and that it does things that she doesn't want it to do. And I don't know about you guys, but when the people that I care about found out about trusted computing and DRM, they couldn't get away from it soon enough. But it's not everybody that knows that. So when you pose a question to somebody like this, it makes sense to them. Why are you spending money on a product that demands that you buy another product so that product will work? And of course, we're talking about all the garbage you have to put on your Windows machine to protect it.
I agree with you.
That's when people start paying attention. And that is exactly the question that I pose at Helios Solutions, and it's starting to get a lot of people interested. So, you know, hopefully there'll be somebody in Topeka, and there's a good friend of mine, Larry. He's going to start working the West Coast, doing the same thing, and he's going to work it under the Helios Solutions banner, you know, on the West Coast. So it's going to spread, and it might be Pat Solutions, you know, it might be whatever, you know, but as soon as people start offering, you know, Linux to people, and make them understand that do you know how hard it is to make somebody understand they don't have to have virus protection? Try it sometime. But what do I do? But I'm unprotected. You're immune. You don't need any protection. Yeah, but what do I do about viruses? And you just want to bang your head on the keyboard. Pat, you've never done that, right?
Never.
Never. No.
So if you follow that train of thought, and one of the explanations for Linux not having viruses has always been, well, it doesn't have enough of an attack presence. It's not
security
worth it.
Security through obscurity.
Yeah, I mean.
Security through obscurity. That's a very easy, that's simple.
It's crack of shit.
yeah, you know what? And it's a blivet is what it is. A blivet is 12 pounds of crap in a 2-pound bag. yeah, you're right. It is a crock. I explained to people that the file system of Linux makes it secure, not the fact that it is obscure. Now, and another thing that people don't quite get is the root versus user thing. Now, you do know that Linspire and FreeSpire try to push off using the product in root. You do know that, right?
Yes.
Yeah. Well, that's silly because even though you're not going to sustain the same damage running as root that you would, you know, running Windows as administrator all the time, you're still going to have problems. You know, so and getting that across to people is another thing. You know, why do I have to type this in every time I want to install? You know, wham. Well, because it's not Windows. Because this is how you do it. And there's some people that just, they'll go back, they'll slip on them silk chains again, and they'll just be happy to be enslaved again, you know? And, hey, that's where Bill Gates was a genius. He's not a genius for cobbling together an operating system. He's a genius for realizing human behavior and the lack of wanting to change. Because that's where we're losing the battle, is just getting people to switch.
You hear stories about Windows users who tried Vista out, and you know they get these pop-ups coming up telling them, "Do you want to do this? Do you want to do this?" And they hate it so much that they disable it within, you know, the first day or so. So you know the last attempt that you know Microsoft makes of trying to you know improve the security, the users don't want it. It's too hard for them to wrap their heads around it.
That's true, and I think that Granular has found the medium ground for that. I don't want to speak out of school, but I believe that he may be working on some scripts that are going to allow simple things, such as repository permissions and things like that, to just slip through. And I don't think that's going to be a problem, you know. But of course, if you're going to go in and fool around in your bin files and stuff like that, sure, you better have some permission. But you're right. The everyday user doesn't like to have to. And gee, I wonder where Vista got that idea. You know, of asking for permission. That's pretty ingenious, don't you think?
Yeah, I think they stole it from Apple, but I'm not sure where Apple got it from.
You know, yeah.
They must have invented it like they did everything else, like virtual desktops. Yeah,
more innovation from Apple.
Exactly. So tell me, do you guys, as far as on the advocacy, as far as people trying to sell Linux, I'm seeing it more and more every day, you know, and look at Ubuntu, and we've talked about Ubuntu. Ubuntu is like a phenomenon. I mean, it's big on the street. You guys hear it, right? Ubuntu is huge on the street. Nobody's really advertised it, aside from a couple billboards in California that popped up. So, you know, I railed against word of mouth being ineffective, but then again, you know, I've been known to be wrong once, I think. But Ubuntu's gotten huge. And as far as advocating it, you know, I just, you know, I've been railed on for, you know, for because they think I'm against it, and I'm not. Whatever gets it out there is fine with me. But the word of mouth thing is working, and I wanted to know what you guys think. Do you guys see it working the same way?
Oh, definitely. I mean, you know, where I work, everybody uses Ubuntu, and when they're talking about, you know, installing this or that version of Linux, they're always talking about Ubuntu. You know.
Dan, can I apply there?
Yeah.
Sure.
A place where people actually are into Linux.
Yeah, oh my God. You know, we have one developer who's running Windows, and boy, does he get ostracized like every day for not using Linux.
Oh, does he really?
Yes, he does.
Oh, that's sad.
You know, I'm used
to the other way.
I go to work every day, and I, you know, since I started this new job, I the only thing I have to use Windows for occasionally is because our network requires some authentication through Windows, and it retains your Mac address. And then every now and then I have to boot into Windows to change my password on the Windows side, because if I don't, it expires, and then after 2 weeks my account gets disabled, and then I have a hell of a time getting to the network resources I have, because our systems team has not figured out how to support Linux properly with Cisco's authentication system, so it's done through the Windows domain. Other than that, like 10 minutes that I have to spend booting into Windows and shutting it down to change my IP address, that's the only time I use Windows or any other operating system. I'm straight Linux 24/7.
Well, yeah, and so am I now, of course, except when I'm at work. I'm recovering from an illness, and I took work at a tech support place for a well-known ISP. And when they call in, you know, the problem is connectivity. I can't connect, and it's DSL. Imagine that, can't connect, right? So the first thing we have to tell them is turn off your virus protection. Turn off your virus protection. I mean, that's the first thing, because 6 times out of 10, once they do that, they can connect. And that was my point, you know, and I'm talking to a lot of people that are what I consider to be Uber geeks. I mean, these guys are geniuses. They think Ubuntu is Linux. You know, they got handed a disk, and they just focused on it. And when you tell them there are other distributions, they look at you funny, you know. Now, I'm not talking about all of them, but I'm talking about enough to make a difference, you know. So that's a little disconcerting. But my point is, if you have to tell people to turn off the product that is supposed to protect them so they can connect to the internet so they can get attacked, it leaves them scratching their head. And you know, can you imagine what happens if I'm trying to tell people about Linux while I'm at work? That doesn't go over well. We don't support it.
Don't you hate that?
It's a shame. It's a shame because I've put in, of course, you know, the Garden Variety live CD, when you put it in, you know, I mean, it's wired to work immediately with DHCP. You know, so if you've got a PPOA connection, you put it in, even with DSL, you put it in and it works. Of course, if you're bridged or if you're OE, you know, you can have some problems. But with Linux, especially with my ISP, you don't run into those problems. So why it's not supported, I don't know. But things are about to change. The Dell deal, as much as I'm not liking the way it's going, you know, it's going to mean a lot. It's going to mean a lot in the development of drivers. It's going to mean a lot in the development of drivers. And that's my big hope. My only hope is that the Dell deal gives us drivers. Are you guys seeing that or not?
I think so, yeah. I think they said that they're going to work towards it, from what I heard now. And one of the things, I'm really, really excited about it, and I'll tell you why. Because they have cracked that door open to show other companies that it's possible to make some money offering Linux on a computer product. And some people have they saw Dell started, and they're starting to grab on themselves. That Acer is doing it now.
Lenovo
is doing it, and it's Lenovo. Yeah, okay.
HP does it though, don't they, on higher end machines or business class machines?
I think
machines?
They do. Yeah, I think HP does too. And I think that absolutely rocks. I love it.
It's the quiet revolution.
Yeah.
It's just,
yeah, and you know, it doesn't have to be, they don't have to scream it from the rooftops and stuff like that or whatever. I just think it's really, really cool. If I go to a website now and find out that, even if I have to drill around a little bit and find out that they offer Linux on a laptop, or even if they don't offer Linux on a laptop, they offer me a laptop without a freaking operating system.
And you know what? That, you know? In itself, That right, and bingo, that right there is the home run. And you hit it right on the nose. Even if it's not Linux, because do you, a year ago, trying to get Dell to sell you a computer without an operating system, do you have any idea what kind of tooth-pulling it took to get that done?
It was impossible. You couldn't do it.
No, you could
Your
not.
Only and alternative you, was if you wanted to get Red Hat on a Dell box, and it had to be a server.
Or DOS.
Or DOS. It's the only thing you could do.
Right. Right. And today it's just a matter of asking for it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I was talking to a person that is fairly involved in the community the other day, and he asked me what I thought. Did I think Microsoft was losing their grip on the vendors? You know, I actually had to think about that. But then I had to answer after I thought about it, and I didn't answer it right away, you know, because I didn't know, you know. But yeah, they are losing their grip on the vendors, and I think you're seeing that in these backdoor deals. I think that's part of why you're seeing these deals is the fact that they know that they're going to have to generate a revenue stream other than their cash cow, which has been Windows, because they are. I see it just, of course, like I said, I've got an advantage there because I can talk to somebody that sat in those meetings. But the fact of the matter is, Microsoft is, they don't have the leverage now that they did. And I'm patting my pockets now. I'm looking for my sympathy. Have you guys seen it? I can't seem to find it. But
I think Pat has it.
So, you know, hey, you know, I mean, after all these years of the screwing they've given, it's kind of good to see them sweat.
So you think they're going to ever, trump their patent cards?
No, they can't. They can't. I hate the term. It's a lose-lose. Number one, they can't name them. All that is to keep a business owner from switching to Linux. That's all that is. There's no other reason that they're doing that. You know, I mean, the sky is falling, right? And everybody's looking up toward the sky, and they don't want to start anything because the sky is falling, right? Well, the only reason, and no, they'll never pull those out. Number one, because if they do have 235 of them, my guess is 234 of them are going to be in question. And number two, I think that Microsoft is going to work toward actually lobbying within the next year of abolishing patents. I think Microsoft is actually going to come out for the abolishment of patents within the next year. I mean, if you stop and think about it, they really don't have any other choice. Have you guys heard from ESR, by the way?
Why don't they have any other choice? I mean, all they've done for the entire length of the company is steal from somebody else. I don't see why they can't keep on doing that, you know?
Well, no, they can't. They cannot keep on doing it because the genie's out of the bottle. They've already played their ace card, and they can't rake the cash in yet. Because everybody else hasn't shown their cards. They can't because there are no patents that are 100% provable to be violated. I'm going to bet 234 out of the 235 patents that they're claiming to be in violation are either not in violation or contestable, you know, in a court. No, their patent days are over. In fact, they're going to benefit by lobbying for the abolition of patents, because that way, once they do it, everybody else has to put theirs on the table too.
True.
And they level the playing field. And I think it's going to happen in a year's time.
Well, if they did that, that means they could also continue their current version of innovation along with
exactly.
that.
Exactly. And exactly, you hit it again. You see what they'll be able to rake in by doing that.
Sure.
Yeah, I mean they don't have to steal the slow sheep from the edge of the herd anymore. They can just go in and take the whole thing and load it on a truck. I say it's a year, if not less. But we'll see. We'll see. I went to Washington not too long ago and was able to talk to. I didn't accomplish much. All I did was talk to people that were already on our side. the good representative from Colorado, Senator Boucher, and of course we went there talking about possible revisions to parts of the DMCA. And Microsoft has been a huge supporter of DRM because they see a lot of money in it. Well, that backfired on them as well. So every time, you know, they're closing the door on their face. Every time they go through a doorway, they're smacking themselves. So it's just the backdoor deals are the more you think about it, the more they make sense, because now they're making money off of Linux. Like I said, I feel just a little dirty every time I think about it. But I don't know. That's the way it seems to me to be coming down. But hey, what do I know?
I don't know. What do you know? Doesn't sound like
much.
What were you going to say about ESR there? We have spoken with ESR in the past.
Well, he's on the FreeSpire board.
Right.
And I emailed him not too long ago, and it's not like, you know, we're buddies, but you know, we've exchanged emails over the years, and I did a rather large article in support of his World Domination 201 piece, and I was just curious to see what he has to say about this, because I haven't heard a word.
He hasn't posted on his blog in ages, like over a year.
Yeah, I know. I know. That's why I'm asking, you know, because, you know, I heard from him during the Tux 500 thing, you know, and he came out in support of it, at least personally. But since then, I haven't heard a word from him, and I was curious as to what his thoughts on this Linspire thing were. So I was hoping you guys knew something I didn't.
Nah, he didn't talk to us. I wish we did know a little more, but...
Well, we're talking to Russ Pavlicek. He used to be on the Linux show with Eric Raymond, so...
Right.
He might know more than we would.
No, I know. I mean, you guys, pretty popular show, man. You know, I mean, you've had some heavy hitters on here, so... I was just hoping to get a little insight from him, because the Linspire thing was a surprise to a lot of people. You know, so I was just curious as to what his thoughts on it were. Have you guys ran the new FreeSpire yet?
No.
No.
I don't plan on it.
Well, I have to take a look at it just because it's what I do.
Yes, you don't have a choice.
It's surprising. CNR isn't near as invasive as it was, you know, because on the 1.13 version, it was. You know, CNR was in your face all the time, but they've kind of put it on a shorter leash now, and it seems to work pretty well. And I didn't know if you guys had looked at it or not, but for what it is, and that is just a completely non-technical Linux, it's pretty sweet.
It just came out like today, I think.
Yeah. Well, I was able to get a 24-hour jump on it, and so I didn't have to wait in the line to download it. But it would. But I ran it for a good part of this morning, and it's surprising, and I was surprised by it. So maybe this is a new tool for, and that's what it would be good for. Would be good for somebody's grandma, you know, or somebody's granddad, somebody that sent email, wanted to play some online games and to surf and to do a little bit of this and that. It's going to be the perfect distro for that.
Well, hopefully it'll have some kind of future with everything that's...
I'm hoping so, but what I'm bothered by is the fact that nobody's going on TV. Nobody's, you know, because Lobby for Linux, we're going to push for that again here pretty soon. We haven't forgotten it. We need to start a community-wide committee that will administrate the funding so we can get on television and we can get on radio and we, because you know, word of mouth is work great, but hey, you know, it's just not getting us where we need to be. And I can flip around on my cable channels and see 4 to 5 Microsoft commercials a day. We need to get the word out there, fellas. And I'm just a little disappointed that the bigger companies haven't taken that up.
Well, Novell actually produced a pretty cool video segment that, you know, "Hi, I'm Linux" thing that, you know,
yeah,
didn't go anywhere, but it was pretty good, you know, clip that they put together.
And you know what? It was great, but I can't remember what channel that was on.
I was on channel YouTube.
That's my point. That's my point. That's what we need. We need some national media exposure, and hopefully we'll be able. That's Lobby for Linux is next. That's our next big project. We don't want to be a part of it as much as we want to be the broker that puts it together. But you know, when you start talking about tens of thousands or hundreds of thousands of dollars and asking somebody to administrate that kind of money, boy, people just aren't interested anymore, you know. So
yeah, we need to funnel some money into turning ESPN into ES Penguin. Damn it.
That's what I'm talking about. Now, did you guys? And you know, there were mixed reviews on it. You do know that Tux was in the Indy 500 this year, right?
Yes. You got some flack for that.
I almost got to see it. Yeah.
Yeah, made a whole 38 laps before he hit the freaking wall. But to be honest about it, the fact that he even started his engine, see the we made our money, and I mean money is in an esoterical term. We made our progress in the time that it was announced, between the time the flag dropped. That's when we got our coverage. I mean, we got like major coverage in newspapers and two magazines and a bunch of small newspapers and a buttload of websites. So we raised a little over $18,000, and the people that put together the we were rated as getting the number one exposure for the money out of all the sponsors, because we put up $18,000 and we got something like $250,000 in exposure. You know, so yeah, if we could do that nationwide and not wreck and hit a wall doing it, man, that's what we need to do. But that's going to start here in about another month.
We need to sponsor the Tim McGraw concert, the world tour.
You know what? That's not a bad idea. That's not
a bad
idea.
To have any part of it.
Yeah, I know. And you know what's going to happen, right? Yeah, and everybody goes to a Tim McGraw concert and has a computer in a closet. You know that. You know that's coming, right? You know. Now, actually, I did.
It ain't
did,
funny. What is it, sis?
I know. You know what? I don't think that's funny either. As I moved the car out of my front yard off of blocks. But actually, I did approach Matthew McConaughey about being our spokesman. And the fact that I was able to, I ran into him at a Lexus dealership and just walked up to him and just asked him if he would do it. He said no. But hey, you know what? You don't get a chance to ask. You know.
At least you asked.
Yeah, he said Linux.
What is that Linux shit? Yeah.
Yeah, he said, what's a Linux? And I tried to explain it to him. And he was, you know what, he was polite. You know, he said, oh, well, it's something I'll look into. And I said, can I send you a disk? And he looked at me for about a slow count of three and then said, no. You know, okay, conversation's over here. I think my car is ready. I'll see you. Bye, Matt. Yeah. Anyway. So what, you guys all run Ubuntu?
And Slackware and Arch and Scent.
Now these guys like run Mac.
What guys?
Yeah, I know. Well,
and OS X and Debian and NetBSD and probably several other things I can't think of.
I've played lately with PCBSD. That's kind of nice, man. I kind of like it. I haven't done a lot with it, but Yeah, hey, take a look at Granular. Take a look at that. See what you think. And he's written some hacks and some scripts into it that make it do some pretty cool stuff. You know, so I don't know.
You said that's an offshoot of PC Linux OS. Is that what it was?
Yeah, and I spent 2 years of my advocacy career as some people would say, a shill for PC Linux, and whatever title you want, that's fine. But it's only because I believe in the product. You know, now since I've kind of opened, we've grown. Lobby for Linux has grown quite a bit, and I've just found it necessary to separate myself from one distro. You know, I can't do that anymore. That's not responsible. So as good as it is, you know, there's other distros out there that need some attention, and I think Granular is good, and of course there's people not happy about it, but hey, you know, I mean it's progress. So take a look at it, and he's got a DVD version coming out here pretty quick that promises to have some surprising things on it as far as configuration. What he's done, he's taken the KDE desktop, and he's taken all of the configuration tools and put them up front so you don't have to dig for them. You know, like the themes and stuff like that.
Right.
He's hacked it so it's all right there. You don't have to go digging for it. It's all in one spot, and it's pretty nice. It's pretty nice, and he's got the benefit of still being able to use all the PC Linux repositories, and even though it's an RPM based distribution, the beauty of it is it uses Zapkit.
Package management with it works, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I was using something. It might have been SUSE. I can't remember what it was. But it was the package management. It was like getting a root canal, you know? And I found myself missing Synaptic, you know, and apt-kit to the point where, you know, I just, you know, I went back to what I knew. So.
Yeah, yeah.
Hey, give it a look, see what you think. It's not a radical departure, but he's made enough changes on it to make it really sweet. Well, I'm listening to us on VLC, man. You guys use it?
I've used it in the
Absolutely.
Past.
Oh, I love VLC, man. I do. I don't even use StreamTuner anymore.
I'm kind of a preferential to, for listening to streams, I don't listen to too many streams, actually. But I've been
prepping. I listen to Last FM, but I don't listen to music. I listen to talk. I listen to you guys. I don't learn anything from listening to music so much anymore. You know. So yeah, I listen to a lot of stream talk. But VLC, it's sweet.
That's always been one of my favorites.
And there's another one. It's a GNOME tool, but it runs pretty good in KDE. It's called Listen. You seen that? It's just another music app, right? No, it's pretty cool. Listen, you get a chance to look at it. I think it's in most Debian repositories.
Let me see if I have it. So, with System Linux gaining popularity, how far off do you... Yeah, Linux Listen is a nice music player manager for GNOME. I'll try it out. One of the biggest hurdles I see with Linux that is a lot of people comment on is the fact that there's not a huge commercial game market. Do you think that's going to change, or do you think that Microsoft has it wrapped up?
You know what it is? A friend of mine that runs the Nixed Report website, it's a magazine website, Linux website magazine. Thomas has done some marvelous things with that website. Let me pull it up here, fellas. I don't mean dead air time. Let me get this pulled up.
It's okay. You fit right in.
Yeah, that's okay. There's a fellow. In fact, if you go to blog at Helios, or I'll get it. Never mind. He sent me a link today that deals with a program that runs under VMware, and I've got it right here. And it runs. Very well. It runs a lot of games well on it. and they've packaged it to the point where it's just almost seamless. I mean, it's just, it's great. Give me just a second, I'll pull it up here for you.
Are you talking about Super Gamer?
That's a buddy of mine. He put together that a while back, and he's over on the Vector team now. He's put together a beautiful DVD. Now, this is, I'm going to get this for you right now. Hold on just a second. I'm get my Thunderbird up, man. This is fantastic, and I started playing with it too. In fact, it was tested on Ubuntu, and it works great on Ubuntu. But it's also been hacked to work on Debian now, and I even think the Vector guys have got it working. So let me pull it up here. But it rocks. I'm just absolutely jacked about this, and it's talk about running games. But to answer your question, the gaming, I tried to put that off as nonsense. You know, I really just tried to say, you know what, you know, that's not our market, but it really is. We can't ignore that market because there's too many people that do game. I mean, a lot more than I thought, and I was dead wrong in saying that it wasn't important because it sure is. It's way important. Let's see.
It is very important.
Well, yeah, it is. I mean, I didn't, you know, I was trying to, you know, put it off like, you know, it just wasn't. But, man, it's, I didn't, I really see, because I don't game, you know,
uh-huh.
So it's just not the world that I live in. You know, but the more, and especially with the people that I work with, you know, that's when I'm starting to realize that, you know what, it's a whole lot more important than I ever thought it was. So, you know, and gosh, of course, you know, looking for this and I can't.
Ha ha ha.
And isn't that the way it always is?
Did I just hear Russ? I guess not. Sorry.
Have you seen,
I think he did.
He jumped in.
Russ is here?
Yeah.
Are you on, Russ?
Well, there you are.
Hey, man, what's going on?
Oh, we're having a wonderful time. I think we have a little bit of crosstalk here between...
Yeah, we've got a delay. Sounds like we've got a delay. Do you guys know who Don Paris is?
Yeah
we know Don.
Yeah, have you seen his new site?
Mm.
Yes.
Oh, it's fantastic. I mean, I'm going to do an exclusive for him weekly. You know, he's asked me to blog for him, and I told him I would do an exclusive for him. So I wish him the best of luck, man, because Don's a hardworking fellow, and he's really he knows a lot of people, and I really think he can make a difference with his site. So I'm wishing him the best of luck, man. It's blue-new.biz. Is that right?
See you in a second. blue-new.biz. Is that blue, B-L-U-E, dash, new, N-E-W?
G-N-U.
Oh, G-N-U.
G-N-U. I never say GNU, man. I always thought that was goofy, so I never said GNU.
You freedom hater.
Yes, blue.
I know, you know what? I have been accused.
What a night. That's pretty neat.
Well, you know what, I really think he's going to make a difference because he's shooting for a different market. You know, he's shooting for the suits, and I think that's important. So. Well, fellas, I can't talk and chew gum at the same time, so I'm not finding that. But I'm gonna email it to you before the show's over.
All right.
Okay.
And I'll get it to you because I'm just not finding it. It's in the spider web that I call my email. I'm still organized. All right, guys. I got to hit the road.
Okay, thanks a lot, Ken. And,
well, you bet, man. Thanks for having me on.
Hey, no problem. We hope to touch base with you again in the future.
Right. Yeah, you bet. You bet. Anything you need to know or anything I can do to help you guys, you let me know.
All right. Well, you keep up the great work. Thanks a lot.
Hey. All right, man. Take care.
Thanks man. Have a good one.
Good night. All right, guys. Thanks a lot. Bye-bye.
Bye.
All right, and now we have with us our special correspondent, Russ Pavlicek.
The mighty Russ Pavlicek.
Yes, the mighty.
Oh,
Yeah, we didn't get that typewriter noise running for in the background for him.
Well, it's an interesting thing to be out here at Linux World in San Francisco. I think the most interesting thing about the show is how uninteresting this damn show is right about now. Dave McAllister, who some people might know, long made the comment that you know, Linux is succeeding when no one cares about it anymore. And I think we're rapidly approaching that point where, you know, people don't go to a show about Linux. They don't go to a show about Windows. You go to a show about something that's new and different and, you know, is built on top of that platform. And, you know, there is traffic here, but it's not like it was. There's activity, but there's not excitement.
Right.
It's becoming kind of boring, quite honestly.
Yeah, you know, I have a question for you, though.
Yeah.
What I had noticed out here on the East Coast is that the Linux World Expo people like completely lost track of who it was that was, you know, generating all the interest at their shows, and they dropped all their support for the users.
The community.
It became a giant corporate event, which of course nobody is interested in. So you get a bunch of vendors that are hanging out there talking to each other or whatever. And what I wanted to know was if that sort of thing
people
is happening in San Francisco, too, yeah.
Is it happening? Yes. But the one thing that is very interesting to me is that if you go to the .org pavilion, as it is, in the back, they seem to have pretty consistent traffic. It's not heavy traffic, but you have this very consistent flow of people who are interested. And that's also, quite frankly, one of the differences between the West Coast and the former East Coast show, is that the .orgs, the East Coast show in recent years, weren't that popular. You didn't have a hell of a lot of geeks in New York City, quite frankly, proportionally, whereas, you know, out here you'd have a lot of the Silicon Valley types who actually want to come and check out the you know, new cool shit. Excuse me. So the .org out here is actually doing pretty well, and most of the people I spoke with in the .org area seemed pretty happy about the traffic that they were getting. Not overwhelming, but pretty solid. Whereas, they've been kind of fishing. I think the IDG people have been fishing for the next great theme of this show. Last year, they were doing what I can't even remember the name of the damn thing. It was the Open Solutions something or other thing that they were trying to give birth to, and that really did do tremendously well. And now they've got the next generation data center business, which is sort of part of the same show. And, it's got some gravity, but not a whole lot, not Linux World style gravity to it, so it just doesn't seem to be attracting the heavyweight crowd either on the business side or on the geek side. It's disappointing in that regard.
Do you see a future with Linux World? Because it seems to be slowly, you know, dying a slow death.
Yeah, I think that's a pretty pretty good assessment. And I think that's why they're trying to find this sort of secondary theme that they can capitalize on. I think they were hoping it would be next generation data center. The way it's gone here, it's been okay, but, you know, there isn't something to be a whole lot of excitement about that. So I'm not quite sure what's going to happen, quite frankly. If they can find, you know, the hot thing to sit on top of Linux or the hot subject, then maybe it'll go on for a while. But it's in pain, I think, is kind of the bottom line to it. In fact, I was talking to the fellow who sells the shirts out front, and, you know, that anyone who's been to that show knows exactly who I mean, because he's been there forever. And we were comparing notes tonight just before I head over here to call in. And, you know, he said, in times past, I'd be running, you know, running my shoes off. And when Heather from IDG used to be doing the show management, she'd be running in with food just to, you know, give him something, a bite to eat while he's busy ringing up customers. Well, he's working alone now, and he's checking his email and, you know, doing other things, checking invoices and whatnot, because he's got plenty of time. you know, it's not like the merchandise is moving, but it ain't moving like it used to. And, you know, even that's kind of a telltale sign. It's just not what it was. I guess of all the things that I've seen that seem most interesting, Enterprise DB, I don't know if anyone's run into these fellas, but it's PostgreSQL kind of wrapped as a plug-in replacement for Oracle.
I've heard of it.
And yeah, they seem to be playing it up pretty good. I mean, I saw them at earlier Linux Worlds. You know, and considering the kind of corporate bent, as we noted, this one, you know, may have a little bit more traction than most, because that's, you know, a pretty good concept if you can take take your current Oracle situation and replace it with something that's, you know, a whole lot cheaper. That's going to appeal to at least a certain segment of the market, I believe. But that was kind of interesting. There was the announcement that Lenovo is going to be loading Linux on its laptops, some of them, and the fact that Dell seems to be getting more proactive about talking about Linux on the desktop. Those two are good, interesting.
Didn't Lenovo do this like a year ago, Russ? It wasn't like a year ago that, and it was like all they did was come out with like a $3,000 machine.
Yeah, supposedly they're doing better this time, but God knows. You know, I'm waiting to see. I think that they may actually have to do something more reasonable this time around, because Dell actually is beginning to play. Although in the Golden Penguin Bowl, which was still the highlight of the proceedings as far as I was concerned, Jeremy Allison did bring out in a bonus question that if you go to the Dell website and you click on the, you know, the Linux laptop or what have you that you want to buy, it will automatically recommend that you also buy Windows to put on it, which drew some reaction from the crowd, shall we say. So that much was interesting. But, you know, most of the rest of this, it's pretty staid, you know. The conference side, where people actually go to learn, still seemed pretty good. My surprise, I actually had a lot more repeat visitors than I have in times past to my talk. But,
which talk did you do? What talk did you do? What was your topic?
It's actually, I think, my least favorite talk of all time, but they keep asking me to do it. Managing open and closed source together in a common solution stack. And I actually think it's one of the weakest talks I've ever done, but like I said, this is the third time I've done it, and they wanted it, so I did it. But I don't like it. But I did actually have a lot more repeat people in there. Some of the usual suspects, of course, are back. Jerry Carter and Jeremy Allison from Samba, and you know, a few of the people that I have forwarded on as potential guests. I saw was talking with Don Becker for a while and so forth. But even the list of what we would normally consider Linux notables is getting very, very small. Maybe 10 people at this show that I look forward to see. And in the old days, for those of us who've been around for a while, I used to love doing the Linux shows because there was always someone who was doing something cool that you could talk to. And there were the people you knew, and then there were the people you didn't know, and you got to know over a beer somewhere. And that atmosphere is just so gone.
What they need to do is get more alcohol and more booth babes. That might help a little bit.
I don't think they're... I was actually listening to a couple attendees that, you know, I've known from work affiliation. They said, you know, we can't even find a party to go to after hours. You know, they used to be notorious for having several different parties put on by various vendors. You know, you stop off at their booth and you get the little pass or something like this, and you go into whatever their event is after hours. They said they couldn't find a single thing for tonight.
That's
so
pathetic.
Yeah.
That's sad.
Oh, it really is. It really is. And for those people who do remember inside the early years, the BSD booth people, in particular, they used to have the you know, their little red demon and a couple very nice little red demonettes.
Yes, I remember that.
Floating about. Yeah, anyone who saw it remembered it. The only thing I saw even akin to that was, I even forget the name of the company, but they had something that looked like a giant triangle walking around the show floor at one point, and it's like, yeah, this is exciting as hell, isn't it? I mean, there wasn't even any walking penguins or anything around here. It's just, geez, you know, get on with it.
Well, let me ask you, Russ, was Red Hat there, any presence at all? I know the last few times they haven't even bothered to show up at the Linux World.
Oh, that's interesting. Let me think about this, because quite frankly, I wasn't even looking for them. The SUSE is actually here with Novell in, you know, a very noticeable way. I'm trying to think whether... I know I've seen the Red Hat emblem, but I'm wondering if it was only in partners of, like, IBM and stuff. I do not recall seeing a Red Hat booth, per se. So I would be tempted to say no. Maybe I can actually take a look at the show program just to check that out. But the interesting thing there, Novell definitely has shown up there near the door. They sponsored the email garden, which is actually a whole lot smaller than it used to be. And the SUSE stuff is very evident as well. But yeah, Red Hat, I think, has become more stealthy.
They've kind of blown that off the last few years.
I have a more...
Yeah,
I have a more...
I remember their one, I think it was the one in Boston they did, where it seemed like they were wearing these very strange Western shirts, bright red, that looked like the salute to Brokeback Mountain, but I was wondered about that one. In fact, you know, I know some Texas guys from old Compaq days, and, you know, I went over to them and said, so if you wore one of those shirts going into a bar when you went home, how long would it take before someone beat you to death? you know, it, I don't know, it was kind of strange. But, let's see, I am looking here at the list, and I am not seeing Red Hat.
I have a more important question for you, Russ.
Yeah.
Of all the vendors and all the booths that you got to see, those that were giving presentations, were they actually using Linux to give their presentations, or were they using Microsoft PowerPoint?
You know, the interesting thing there, I think you still see quite a bit of Microsoft. But the other thing is that I'm finding less presentations and more, I don't know how to freaking describe it. There's sort of a new tendency not to just have someone stand up there in front of a screen and, you know, talk their way through their product, which is kind of what we're all used to. Instead, you got these people with the headsets who wander around and kind of scream at you randomly or whatever the hell it is. And in fact, you know, there's the Intel walking tour, which is almost hilarious, where you see these people with these little blue flags that they hold above their head, and you can see them coming, you know, and you have this gang of sheep behind them all wearing headsets, listening to the leader as he stops off at various important places on the show floor to describe, some Intel partner doing this or that or the other thing. So it's actually less presentations than I would expect to see, and more, static slideware, things that are sort of rolling along and just people talking. A lot of the big sort of amphitheater-style booths and stuff, they seem to only be a handful of those that I've really noticed that fit into that category. Don Marty at LinuxWorld.com has been, trying to do something a little bit more interesting in doing an unconference booth where basically people sign up and do an Ask the Experts session for 30 minutes on whatever topic you're willing to talk about. And it's not really a presentation, or it could be. It's just a way of chatting with people who are either in the .org or they were instructors or something like this inside the conference, and just a way to sit down and get more information. And that's interesting, and it seems to ebb and flow through there. But I don't know. It isn't what it was, even in the presentation side. It's just not the same as it used to be.
Now, have you been going to some of the smaller, or maybe they're not smaller anymore compared to what Linux World has been reduced to, but some of the other events like SoCal and O'Reilly's OSCON?
Or Linux Northwest.
Or Ubuntu.
Ohio Linux Festival.
Unfortunately, I haven't been able to do a lot of them because the way my work works, I can get away with pitching, speaking at Linux World, but going much past that, it's a little bit more difficult. Last time I was at OSCON was probably about 3 years ago or so, and a lot of the other ones I just haven't even been able to do. I mean, I've actually been considering trying to head out to the Ohio one there at the end of September. Just to be part of a geek show again, for God's sakes, please.
Yeah. Plus, you can hang out with us
and drink beer. Hey,
I don't know if I can pull it off or not, because it's actually my daughter is getting married the weekend before, so she'll just be like coming back from San Francisco, I think, on that Saturday. So I'm not sure that that's the best time for me to be disappearing on her, but. But it's sort of on the radar, and I'm going to wait and see what I can say one way or the other. But unfortunately, trying to justify being away from work to do some of these other ones doesn't fly too well at the moment, which is sad. Frankly, I miss Atlanta Linux Showcase.
I hear a lot of people talk about that. Dave Yates mentioned that a couple of times when we talked, and other people have talked about it as well.
Yeah, that was a fantastic show. I mean, that was the first Linux event that I ever went to. I went to the one in 97, and then I think 98 and 99. But the one in 97, which just passed the 10-year anniversary, come to think of it, I think it was beginning of June. That, 2 days on a weekend, it was a Saturday and Sunday, in Atlanta, the conference hotel was a day's in across the street from the, that's Gang March down in the center of Atlanta. But 500 geeks on a weekend talking about Coke, and that utterly convinced me that Linux would become a major force in business, for the simple reason that you saw fire in the eyes of every one of those attendees, and there was no rational reason in the world for Linux not to grow to be a major force in the industry. And I came back to my work. I was at Digital at the time, and went back to deck and started saying that we should be paying attention, and people are poo-pooing me and, you know, oh, that's obvious, et cetera. Well, you know, I do not regret my stand that I took that day in any way, shape, or form. And I'll tell you, it was a boatload of fun, absolute boatload of fun. I would love to be part of something like that again, but a little harder to come by. Someone mentioned that the the one in Ottawa, I believe, is still very high geek content and well worth going to. So I sent me today. So,
well, I tell you, that's much the feeling that I had after going to the Ohio Linux Fest last year.
Cool.
You know, after doing the Linux World Expo route for a while, I was so very, very happy to find that none of that, you know, corporate garbage was going on at the Ohio Linux Fest. And it was, you know, it was primarily a user-based conference with a lot of really interesting talks. And the problem that we had, one of the big problems that we had was that we were, you know, we had a table there and we wanted to be able to talk to everybody. But the problem on an individual level that we all had while we were there at the booth is we wanted to go, like, and listen to some of these conferences, some of the talks, but every one of them were so good, and they would have, like, three going on at a time. You just could not possibly, you know, go and listen to these things. So we missed out on a lot of really cool stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, and that is reminiscent of a lot of the old conferences. It was never a question of, is there anything worth listening to? It's which one's going to hit the top, which is the one that I'm going to have to miss out the other ones so I can go here. Of course, in 97, too, I'm pretty sure it was 97, that Linus actually gave a keynote at ALS, and that's something that he... has rarely done. I think about 99 or so. I think it was about the last time. But I think there was one of the Linux worlds in early 2000, like around 2002 or something. I think did it, you know, that was about the last time I heard. But, that was well worth it right there. And of course, listening to at the time Eric Raymond talking about his new paper, The Cathedral and the Bazaar, that was pretty wild too. And once again, that lit up a lot of eyes as he was talking. In fact, the first OSCON that I went to, which I spoke at, I think it was like 99, something like that, 98 or 99, was when Eric was still very, very hot on the speaking circuit. And they put me up against him in the scheduling. And I thought, why should I even show up in my own damn room? You know, who's going to come listen to me when you could be listening to Eric, which is what everyone was waiting for? And I ended up with 8 people, and, you know, I flew cross-country to speak to 8 people, and I'm like, man, you know, what a summer. But that actually taught me a lot, because those 8 people, I think like 4 of them contacted me again after the show. There were 8 people who wanted to know what I had to say. And that taught me that, you know, it's not about the quantity. We get so seduced by quantity inside our, particularly business, but just in our thinking as a culture, that bigger is always better. Well, these were people that were there for quality. They wanted to know something. And so the stuff that I gave them that day meant something. And I really learned that, you know, here I thought that I was almost wasting my time being there. But quite frankly, I probably made a better impact on those people than if I were speaking to 50 people who were just doing it because I was the, you know, least offensive choice for that time slot or something like that. But personal reflection.
Have you heard from Eric recently, Russ?
Jeepers, it's been a long time.
I'm curious to see what he thinks about this this Linspire thing with Kevin Carmody leaving.
Yeah, I think the last time I talked to Eric, I think I saw him once after TLS went off the air. I think I saw him at a show somewhere. But
you know what would be really fun? If we did a reunion for you guys, and we got you and Eric and Doc all on our show at one time. Chew the fat for a little while.
That would be interesting.
Yeah, the invitation would be open for everybody from TLS, but the only people that have ever, you know, responded in kind to us is you and Eric and Doc.
Oh, no.
But I think that would be great, you know?
Well, that would be interesting. I haven't seen Doc in probably a year.
We could even mess up Doc's connection, you know, so he sounded like he was really far away or something like that.
He's in Denmark.
Yeah. You know, playing Where in the World is Doc Searles was one of our favorite activities.
We'll put some static on his line or something on purpose, you know.
Russ, every time that we talk with you or anything like this, we always ask you the same question because maybe you have a little insight onto this. Is TLS coming back? I mean, or has it been definitively killed, or do you have any insight?
I wish I had a good answer for that. All I know is that a couple months back, you know, I ping Jeff and Kevin regularly. And a couple months back, I got the word that they were almost ready to do a test, server test. He was figuring a couple of weeks. And he's gone silent on me. And I know Jeff from time to time has had, some health issues, and I'm hoping it's not that. I'm hoping it's just, you know, the world being crazy or whatever, but I haven't heard anything from him in a while, and so I don't know. I mean, I know it is the intention for us to come back, and I know he was making preparations for us to come back, but quite honestly, I'm waiting like you fellas to see if it's going to happen. I would love it. I absolutely miss it at this point. Doing what we used to do. It was, once again, it was great fun. And, you know, if there's anything that I'm actually worried about in the Linux world right now, from the business side, it's patents that I'm worried about, but from a realistic side, I think it's that so much of the fun is being drained from the fabric of it, and so much of the community that resulted is fading. That's the thing that worries me the most in what's going on in Linux and open source. That, I don't have any problem with businesses doing business. I really don't. But by the same token, the community's got to do what the community does. And I'm seeing so much less of that these days that I find it worrisome. And doing the broadcast like you're doing, and the small geek conferences, you know, like I'm hearing Ohio is and some of these other ones, you know, that's terrific. But I'm also noticing, you know, like the lugs that used to be everywhere don't seem to be anywhere, at least where I am. The big shows are becoming balls of hot air and quite frankly, dull. Linux World on the East Coast is essentially dead, and the West Coast show is gasping. You know, this is no fun. This used to be boatloads of fun, and I would welcome anything that can help reinvigorate the community and to bring it back to the fore, and let's have some fun again. Let's enjoy doing what we do with open source, and enjoy the fact that not everything's got a freaking price tag on it, fellas. We can do something because it matters, and just because it matters to us.
Gotta have fun. wouldn't be worth it if it wasn't fun, you know?
Yeah.
Well, where do you think the fun is gone?
I don't know that I have a great deal more to share about the show. I did see an announcement that Prodigy apparently has some MS Project targeted thing that they are, you know, trying to sell as a replacement for Microsoft Project. Never seen it. Sounds like, you know, could be interesting. I'll see. IBM and Novell, I'm hearing, are getting uglier, so be it. That's about it. I'm looking over some notes that I've made. Most of it is actually pretty damn boring.
So you're going to go back next year?
We'll see. I mean, I will probably put in the talk, simply because I certainly enjoy doing it, and I can get away with doing it at my work. And if they're willing to let me come out here, I'm more than happy to do that. And I do actually at least get to see a few of the people that I've gotten to know over the years, even though that number is dwindling, sadly. But I will probably, you know, put in to do it for the sake of doing it. But I may actually try to see if I can sell my management on something more interesting next year. We'll have to see.
The shows I like to go to, I think SoCal and maybe Linux Northwest, those two.
I've heard good things about Linux Northwest, but I've never actually made it to one.
Scale, that's what I was thinking of, Scale, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
The one in Los Angeles, I heard, yeah, that's a pretty good one, too.
See, next year, Russ should spring for all of us to come out there.
And oh, yeah.
Living Northwest?
Yeah, sure, that too.
For my personal fortune, right.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah, we'll, I'll chip in and get you one bus ticket to share, and you have to go in each other's luggage.
Actually, a bus ticket might be more expensive than a plane ticket.
Yeah, these days.
That's true. God knows what the gasoline involved.
Whew. Yeah, the other question I had for you, Russ, was what percentage of people walking around with laptops, how many are Macs?
I am seeing Macs, for sure. I would say there's still a minority position. How much? I'd say, and this is just a guess because quite frankly I wasn't really paying attention to this, I would say if I had to pick a number out of the air, somewhere around 15%. I do see them.
It's not too bad because, you know, what the problem is that Pat really, really wants one.
I'm an Apple head.
And he just wants to know, you know, how cool it is, how cool he would look carrying around, you know, a nice new MacBook or something.
No, I want one of those System 76 laptops. That's what I want.
Those are good laptops.
I like that new, the Darter, the 13-inch one. That looks like a sweet laptop.
Is that their economy line one?
No, it's not. It's
or is
the ultra-portable
one. Oh, it's the ultra-portable one.
It's like the 4-pound one, 13.3-inch screen.
Okay. That's the expensive one.
If I had the cash, that's what I would get.
Oh, no, wait a minute. No, the servo's still the highest-end one, isn't it? Yeah. That's the mid-range price. That's nice. Damn. I already have a servo. I'd like to get another one. They're so good. What's your opinion on that, Russ? when Apple's OS X hit the market, there was a lot of I know a lot of Linux users that that switched to using OS X because it was quote the nicest Unix desktop available at the time. And so what's your opinion on that? I mean, how do you think Linux stands up to OS X today?
Well, I'm not an OS X aficionado by any stretch of the imagination. I guess a lot of that, you know, is my own bias that not being a dyed-in-the-wool Unix guy, I mean, I was actually VMS back in my DEC days. Yeah. I made the jump from VMS to Linux, not Unix to Linux. I tend to look at the world in terms of Linux and Linux-like operating systems. And OS X might be a nice Linux-like operating system, but I, you know, kind of like the real thing. So, you know, I really haven't paid a great deal of attention about the way OS X looks and feels. I mean, maybe I should, just to be better educated, but it just never really stimulated me, you know. It just wasn't my thing. I will say, since the last time I was on, I think someone asked me whether I had played with Ubuntu, and I have finally, in moving my office downstairs at my home, put an Ubuntu machine upstairs. So that I have just a touch point when I'm wandering around upstairs. And I'm actually very impressed with the job that they've done in that area. That's actually very, very nice. And at this point, some people may remember my wife and my daughter, neither of whom are technical, are using Zandros because I thought it was one of the best presentations for someone who isn't technical who's going to be using Linux. And at this point, I guess if I had to do it again, I would probably do Ubuntu for them. Although I must say that my daughter, who is loved dearly, she's a hairdresser by trade. Actually, you know, she had Zandros on her desktop, and I bought her a Zandros book because she wanted to know more about it. And she actually installed Zandros on her Armada, old compact Armada laptop by herself, using the book, no problems. And I'll tell you, the thing that gets me is that I just saw something. It was in the press here in the last couple of days. It was one of those stories talking about Linux on the desktop and how Dell is now talking about it, blah, blah, blah. And they quoted from the world-famous Rob Enderle, oh my frickin' God, that, you know, one of the issues about Linux on the desktop is that it's so difficult to use. Well, if my daughter, who is a hairdresser, can install it from a book on a laptop and have no problems whatsoever, it's time for some people to shut the hell up and get with the times.
Amen.
Dan got, what was it, your older daughter, Dan, when she was 7, to install Ubuntu?
Yeah. I never released the video.
You should have, man.
I still have it, but I just never released it.
Yes, a 7-year-old kid installed Ubuntu. Real tough.
That was like 2 years ago. But see, that's the problem. I mean, you know, we're getting over that hurdle of not having a pre-installed system because, you know, if that's the biggest problem is installing an operating system, even Windows is difficult to install. Hell, OS X would be difficult to install for someone who's never done it before. You know, not understanding what they're doing. It's, you know, comparing apples and oranges there, judging the difficulty of an operating system based upon how hard it is to install. I mean, you know, that's...
But even then, I think we're seeing that, you know, with things like Andros and Ubuntu and some of these other ones, suddenly, you know, it's not that hard. It just simply isn't that hard anymore. So even that old trollish nonsense about what difficult this or that is, the other big one that I think Enderle mentioned is, you know, how hard it is to use and everything. It's interesting to note that, you know, my same thing with my wife and my daughter. If they have to use someone's Windows machine, they find it very difficult to use. and they find it difficult to use because they're used to KDE. And they understand it, and it meets their needs. You change, you know, Windows isn't difficult, but you change what people are used to looking at, and they find it difficult. So this old saw that Linux is difficult is a crock of crap. It's not difficult. It's just a question of what you're used to. And that's been proven to me in spades in the last few years.
That's right. And if you are used to actually doing work and getting something accomplished on your computer, then apparently you're used to using Linux. If you're used to rebooting all day long and not being productive whatsoever, well, you know, we pretty much know what you've been using.
Well, you know, years ago there was one thing that kind of struck a chord with me on this subject was that, it was after I left Compaq and I don't know, I was talking to some people who were looking for jobs at the time, and, you know, there was someone giving hints on resumes and stuff like this, and this guy said, yeah, well, you know, I have to put down on my resume that I organized the training class for my team to upgrade from Windows 95 to Windows 98. Now, if anyone remembers Windows 95 to Windows 98, the basic sole difference in the operating system is that one has a 5 at the end and one has an 8 at the end. And, you know, those of us who are in any way, shape, or form geeks look at that like, huh? Training? What? Turn the thing on. Click the button. How hard is this? But for people who are not technical, any change is bad because it's not exactly what they know, and that spooks them. So this guy, you know, had a training class, and it apparently allayed the fears of his people, and that's goodness. But, you know, that's where this nonsense about Linux is hard comes from, because it's not identical to Windows. And, of course, the other thing is now you're finding people who think that Vista is hard because it isn't what they know. That's all it is. It's not what they know. And they really would rather not have to learn anything new.
Yeah.
That's very true. They went from a blue screen of death to a green screen, did they not? That's something
and
completely
that
different. There you go. Something completely different for the generally accepted Windows UI. Blue screen of death. They changed it to green, and that just floors people.
The next release of Vista, they'll have a pink one.
Well, the green screen, I think, is the same one that the Xbox, when it dies, it goes to a green screen, too.
Ah, so they're only freaking out the non-gaming populace, right?
Yeah. Got quiet all of a sudden.
Seriously.
Everybody stopped. Ellen was talking, right? Shh, everybody. Ellen's talking. Let's see what he has to say.
Ellen's got his webcam here going. We're making silly faces. And
yeah, something to do. Something to play with.
I tell you.
I want to hear about what you and Ellen are doing on the webcam.
Ellen's got a nice LCD monitor, man. That's a sweet monitor.
It's a sweet monitor. It's 2 milliseconds. Response time on it. I think it's 3001.
Nice.
It's nice.
And he's got like...
It's Vista ready too. It's HDCP
compliant. His background pictures are like these anime chicks that look like aliens with big boobs.
They do. You already know my weakness, so... We discussed that
big
once before.
Big boob, purple haired chicks with magic blue powers, right?
Exactly.
Exactly.
You know what,
if I suddenly disappear, you guys know why.
Yep.
And what I did today, man, I've been checking out game emulation through the Mythbox, and I got MAME running. I got a whole bunch of old school, like, you know, arcade games running through it. One of the other, you can run other emulators through there, like the Amiga emulator, and there's another emulator called Daphne Daphne is like those old laser disc games, like Dragon's Lair and Space Ace. So I was looking through the website, and apparently they try to comply to be legal. If you want to run, if you go and purchase the 20th anniversary Laserdisc DVD of Dragon's Lair, they'll let you legally run Dragon's Lair, Dragon's Lair 2, and Space Ace. So I went on eBay today, and I picked up the DVD for $12, including shipping. So
awesome.
Yeah, I'm going to play with that. Those old Laserdisc games are great. I love those.
I just step out a second. What are you getting that for?
Dragon's Lair is always good.
What's that?
What are you getting those for?
I want to play those old Laserdisc games.
On what?
On Linux.
Through emulation?
Yeah, there's a Daphne emulator.
Ah. Wonder how well that works.
We're going to find out real soon. The disc is on its way.
So it'll, huh. $12, huh?
Yeah, and you can legally run three.
Wait a minute, you can't fit a Laserdisc into a Linux box. You have
No. It's not a Laserdisc. What it is, it's a DVD-ROM. Okay?
Oh, okay. Yeah.
So technically, you could take that DVD-ROM and put it into your standalone DVD player and play the game through there.
Right.
Okay, but they've worked out this deal, the Daphne developers, where they have a deal with the copyright holders for those Laserdisc games. That if you actually own that 20th anniversary DVD-ROM, you can legally play those three other games. So,
Well, I happen to own the other three games on DVD-ROM myself, so I might have to.
Oh, do you? Yeah, check it out, man.
Might have to check that out.
My
wife
check
likes
it out.
Dragon's Lair, so.
Oh, I love the Dragon's Lair.
Yeah, that was a great game.
Yep, Space Ace was another good one.
I got them for her.
Spent many a quarter on that one.
Yeah, so I've been playing some of those old, 8-bit arcade games, man. Some really good ones. Punch-Out, Spy Hunter, Ms. Pac-Man, Galaga.
Night.
All that good stuff.
That will be my next order, is to get, like, full-size version of video consoles in here.
And last month's Linux Journal, the guy built his own like name box inside of a arcade machine.
Yeah, I've often thought about doing that, but I actually want to get some. I want to get some games. One I want is Tempest.
I have that too.
I know, but it's not the same. I've got that on MAME.
I know
well.
What it is. It's the controller. It's the wheel.
Yeah, you've got to have that weighted wheel to do it right.
That's true.
And you spin it, goes.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I actually got a game controller that works pretty well with it. So, except Tempest, it doesn't. It kind of spazzes out a little bit.
Well, the game controller, you do need to have that wheel to spin Tempest. It's the only way to play that game. Yeah, Marble Madness. That was another one I spent.
Oh, there was
money
what
on.
Else? There was Q-Bert,
Jungle Hunt.
That wasn't a big one.
Zaxxon, Pitfall.
Donkey Kong.
Donkey Kong, of course. That's a classic.
Gorf.
Donkey Dong. Yeah.
Yeah, we used to have one where
Crazy Climber.
At the store. It was a Donkey Kong. That if you hit it
Rampage.
Just right on the door on it, it would actually give you free games.
There you go. Asteroids.
One that I played to death when I was a kid was this one called Firebird. Basically, it was like these birds flying down attacking you. And you just sat there and just blasted the hell out of them.
Look, I'm not sure of that one.
I think that was an Activision game.
Okay.
In the arcade?
I think they had it in the arcade, but the
Firebird is kind of like Galaga.
Kind of, yeah. Right.
Yeah, I remember that one.
Satan's Hollow.
Yeah, you can get that too.
Sinistar.
I didn't see Sinistar.
I live.
I actually found a good site that has all those ROMs.
Phoenix.
You'll send it.
Yes.
Remember Atari's Fishing Derby? Oh my God! That
oh yeah. Remember Superman?
bad game.
I actually bought my father. I gave my father my Dreamcast, and I actually bought him a fishing game.
Stargate.
He likes it, actually.
But you can get, Alan, don't you have one of those little joysticks that you just plug into the TV?
Berserk.
And it comes with, like, 10 games?
Yeah, there's. I've got one for a Commodore. I've got one for...
If you own those, you legally can play...
8 or 9 ones for different Atari ones.
Right, so all those games that are on that little joystick, you can download those and legally run them.
Yeah, I've got the little mini Commodore thing in the closet, the little mini Atari one that came out. Yeah, I collect those little ones.
Dig Dug.
Good stuff, man. Oh, yeah, Dig Dug.
Yeah.
Mr. Dew.
The trouble is I keep burning up batteries on them, so I don't play them as much anymore because I got to get rechargeables for them.
MAME works pretty well.
Zookeeper. Berserk.
Berserk, yeah.
Berserk was cool.
Yep. Defender. Missile Command.
Oh, yeah.
Nah, Missile Command. Again, Missile Command was though you need the ball to play. It's not the same. You need the ball and three keys.
Track and field.
It works better.
Track and field.
Zookeeper. Did I say Zookeeper?
You know what happened, though, man? After a while, they, like...
You're going all over those games you gave me down in the basement.
They just started releasing just crap games. Like, after a while, those Atari 26 games, 2600 games, there were, like, so many vendors just selling such crap releases. And it just killed the market after that.
E.T. That's...
Yeah, E.T. didn't they recall all the E.T.s and bury them somewhere?
Landfill.
Yeah, they had like 300,000 copies laying around.
That was the worst.
Just so bad.
Jackal.
And the one porn game for the 2600.
Remember?
Yeah, Laser Shoot Larry. That was a classic game, Laser Shoot Larry.
Yeah. Russian Attack. Contra.
Some of the Commodore ones are really bizarre. Like, there's this whole scene where people get, like, they call it the demo scene, where they'll, like, put music on there, or they'll have, like, these little video vignettes on there, little scenes. And I downloaded a couple of them. I was just checking out some of these ROM sites, and I found the one that was just plain bizarre. It was like you go around, like, chainsawing people, and in between they had, like, these commercials for, like, chainsaws. It was just the most bizarre thing. I ran it once, and I'm like, what the hell is this? Just crazy stuff.
Custer's Revenge.
I remember that one.
Yeah, the one and only porn game for the 2600.
Custer's Revenge.
I couldn't remember the name, I just remembered what it did.
I never heard of that.
Yeah. I remember that one.
Yeah, it was really, really bad.
Really cheesy.
Is that on Wikipedia?
Probably, yeah.
Probably. Everything's on Wikipedia.
Isn't everything?
I don't know. We'll find out in a second.
Anybody run, like, the Super NES games?
I tried it. It's... You gotta... Was that the one where they started going with, the different controller?
I don't remember. The one game that I would want to run would be, like, Sonic the Hedgehog.
Yeah, I don't need to emulate that. I've got that on like 3 different consoles. So.
You still have them and they still run?
Yeah. I got it on a what was it? Game Gear. The Sega Game Gear, which was their color portable one. Which is actually pretty good with it. Like 8 batteries, I mean... You put them in, and like 20 minutes later, they were all dead, like 6 at a time.
That's right, Sonic was on Genesis.
Yeah.
Mega Genesis.
Yeah, that was a great game, Sonic.
Yeah, Custer's Revenge.
Is Russ still on? Russ, did you do any gaming? Were you into games at all?
Oh, not so much. I mean, you know... In fact, we were kind of reminiscing out here that Jeremy Allison during Golden Penguin Bowl actually brought out some questions about Pong, which actually I have some very fond memories of as a youth bowling and then going back to the arcade section of the bowling alley and playing Pong back there. Let me ask one of the trivia questions from Golden Penguin Bowl to see if anyone, any of you expert gamers actually know the answer. What was the first modification that had to be made to the Pong arcade game?
Oh.
Was it the controllers?
Wasn't it something to do with the tabletop?
Oh,
man, I know what this is, too. Shoot.
This is the standing arcade.
Oh, the standing arcade game.
Yeah, the standing arcade game, you know, the thing that you'd sit in, or stand up there and play in the middle of, you know, your...
Two-player? They made a two-player?
I thought, wouldn't they have to take it out in one-player?
The big modification, the first big modification, is they had to double the size of the coin box because it became so wildly popular that the coin boxes kept filling up too damn fast. People playing Pong.
See, now in the home version of the game, the first thing that they did was they had to add a way to keep score.
Hmm.
Because if I recall correctly, the original version, you just went back and forth. There was no... You had to write the score on a notepad or something like that.
Yeah.
And then they had to... You know, they put a score on there. And then the... It might have been ColecoVision that came out with the Pong that had the overlays that you put on the TV. You remember that? So, like, it was Pong, and you put the overlay on, and it was like... tennis and you know, baseball or whatever the hell else they had, you know, in their little overlays.
Yeah, now I remember those. Yeah, but
yeah, the little
I totally
stick them on the
those.
TV.
The cellophane.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah, I remember that stuff.
Yeah.
Sounds like I'm dating myself, and I'm a lot older than I am, but I do remember seeing that stuff when I was a little kid. So. I was just
good
fascinated
times,
by that. You know, my uncle had one.
Good times.
Good stuff. Anything else left for tonight, or is this almost time to cut off a bin rev?
I think that's it. I'm good. Everybody meet us, you know, once again, everybody check out the Ohio Linux Fest. Meet us there. Bring your beer money.
Yes, yes, yes.
You know?
We're going to party.
We're going to party.
Russ, I want to thank
you. Hopefully Russ will be able to join us, too. That would be really cool.
Yeah, and I want to thank you for coming on tonight and helping spread the word on our show and, you know, helping us out there on the West Coast. Really appreciate it.
Not a problem.
Absolutely. And Russ, you know, the standing offer is you are welcome to come back on the show anytime you want, you know. You get that little twinge of nostalgia going on. You want to get back in and talk a little bit. Boy, you are welcome to come on and talk all you want.
I do appreciate it. Thanks.
And we appreciate what you do.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
All right, we'll close out of here for tonight. Got a song here.
Oh, no.
Nah, it's punk. It's not Europop. You don't have to worry. For those listening on Bin Rev, sorry you don't get the song.
Dan, are you going to have another episode of Dan Washgar
reality
show again tonight?
No. I listened to that episode
of
Bin Rev.
Can help it.
No,
Speaking of Europop, where's Shop? Okay, I do see Shop right on the air.
All right, this is the Confederates. Off of podsafeaudio.com, song Raw Meat. It's punk and probably I don't think it has any explicit lyrics, so it should be safe. But who knows? We'll find out in a minute. Thank you, everybody, for listening. Any last words?
Thanks for listening.
All right.
Yeah, for me. Good night, everybody.
Good night, everybody.
Catch us next week.
And
thanks for watching.
Here it is. Confederates. meat.
Raw meat.
Oh, it sounds like I'm hungry. Raw meat. I don't want to go out and grill something. Hello? It's 10:30 at night.
Barbecue.
It does sound like ramen.
So we can paint anything we want?
Anything at all.
How about if I paint your fine ass? Mm. Yeah, with my tongue brush.
Shut up.
Just shut up. It's over.